This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
The boss keeps pushing,
and American workers keep pouring it on.
Marketplace Midday Update is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Steve Chiatakis.
And I'm Bob Moon, in for Jeremy Hobson. Thanks for downloading our podcast from Marketplace.org. It's Thursday, March 3rd. Coming up, is the economy strong enough to grow on its own without help from the Fed? Here's another question. Just because a ratings agency says your money's in a safe place, can you really trust their stamp of approval?
A little later. Used to be, Bob, action figures came from TV programs or movies.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're coming straight from the commercials. Those stories ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update from Marketplace.org.
Every day, be sure to wake up to the Marketplace Morning Report. It's 8 minutes of radio you can't afford to miss. You'll hear updates on all the latest developments in business and finance as they happen.
Starting out this morning, a number of hopeful economic numbers are out.
The latest reading on how productive the workforce has been shows we're still willing to row harder, building on many months of impressive productivity at the end of last year.
And there's even a hint that the boss might be using some of those gains to hire new workers. Jobless claims dropped by another 20,000 in the most recent reporting week.
For some analysis of the latest news on the labor front, we turn to Diane Swonk, chief economist at Mesirow Financial. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
First, the drop in jobless claims. The question we keep asking, is that number enough to get employment back on track?
Well, it's certainly a start, and it's about the best we can hope for in this economy. We're finally getting back down to the levels of jobless claims that we saw in July of 2008, which was before Lehman failed, but still an economy that was in a recession. The good news is I do think we're going to see job gains in the month of February. We have seen a lot of momentum, but, you know, even if we get 250,000 jobs, we should be seeing 800,000 jobs to make up the kind of losses that we lost during the recession. We'll still be in the hole by the end of this year.
And what about that productivity number? I've got to ask, how much more can American workers keep improving their productivity? There's got to be a finite limit to how hard those who do have a job can keep working, right?
Well, actually, what we're seeing is many firms, not only are those who are working scared and not taking vacations like they once did, or even elective surgeries, I might add, because they're worried about their own jobs, but we're also seeing many firms invest aggressively in technology to further leverage the labor force they have. So even as we're adding workers, we may see productivity slow down a bit, but remain at very elevated levels as they continue to reinvest in technology and try to get their biggest bang for the dollar out of every worker they've got.
Diane Swonk at Mesirow Financial, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke just wrapped up a couple of days testifying on Capitol Hill. He told lawmakers the American economy is self-sustaining, but he's keeping an eye on oil prices. And the board is keeping with its $600 billion program to pump more money into the economy. One of the few people who has a say in how the Fed proceeds is Richard Fisher. He's president of the Dallas Federal Reserve Bank, and he's with us this morning. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. You weren't in favor of the Fed's bond buying program because you thought we were not in danger of a double-dip recession. What about now with these oil prices? Does that change the calculation, do you think?
Well, that's a shock to the system, but at the same time, we are seeing pretty good growth. And we'll have to see whether this is a temporary phenomenon or a longer-term phenomenon. But I don't think the risk of a double-dip recession has raised its ugly head here. I think it has receded significantly.
So the Fed board's going to take up this bond-buying program again this summer when the current program expires in June. How do you think that's going to play out?
I did not support the program. I do expect that program to run its course. I cannot personally foresee the circumstances, barring some external shock that I'm not aware of, where we could justify further monetary accommodation. I have said that I look at this as a bridge loan to the fiscal authorities to get their act together. Nobody could argue that there isn't sufficient liquidity, that is money, in the economy for corporations to put to work to hire the American people. What is missing is the incentive to do so, and that has to come from the fiscal and regulatory authorities, and that's the Congress.
Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke testified this week before Congress that the recovery is self-sustaining. Your thoughts on that?
Yes, I think it is sustaining right now because in the fourth quarter of last year, we saw domestic consumption pick up substantially. That's very, very important. The gears are meshing now. They may not be moving as fast as we would like, but I just read last night Churchill was in the United States on the day of the crash, 1929,
yeah.
As he watched how we were digesting all that crisis. He noted in his little book that this was America at its most magnificent and its most tormented. I kind of feel that on the fiscal policy side, we're both at our most magnificent and at our most tormented. So it'll be interesting to watch how these elected officials work their way through this difficult issues.
Richard Fisher, president of the Dallas Federal Reserve. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you very much.
The loud pop of the housing bubble called dramatic attention to misleadingly high ratings that got stamped on risky and bad home mortgages. Regulators are under orders from Congress to come up with alternatives to the ratings agencies, and they've taken up that task this week. Let's turn to Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer in Washington. Nancy, if these ratings are so questionable, why rely on them at all?
Well, actually, Bob, there are government regulations that force funds to rely on them. For example, some of the funds in your 401k can only invest in things that have gotten a AAA rating from these agencies. Yesterday, the Securities and Exchange Commission proposed new rules that would reduce the reliance on rating agencies. Money market funds could actually rate investments themselves.
Okay, so letting fund managers rate their own investments, that would certainly reduce reliance on the ratings agencies.
True, Bob, but some people say that could actually make things worse. They say funds could invest in riskier things. They'd have to hire new analysts to rate investments, and investors could be stuck paying for those higher overhead costs. I talked to Howard Cure about this. He's a bond analyst at Evercore Wealth Management.
So, you know, they would have to, I don't know, double, triple their staff, maybe even more, then that could potentially put a strain on the finances of these mutual funds.
Now, the SEC is still open to other ideas. The rules published yesterday are just preliminary. Now there will be a period of public comment before final rules are issued. So, Bob, if you have any good ideas, tell the SEC.
I'll scratch my head. Nancy Marshall Genzer in Washington, thanks.
You're welcome.
Heinz reported their profit in the last quarter rose by 20% while announcing today it picked up a majority stake in a Brazilian ketchup maker. Fast food chain Wendy's Arby's says it didn't lose as much money as it did last year.
The Treasury Department said a sale of MetLife stock by AIG brought in more than $6 billion, meaning the insurance giant will be paying a chunk of that back to Uncle Sam after taxpayers bailed it out a couple of years ago.
For more numbers, stocks here at home, and others, you can check out the numbers section at our website, marketplace.org.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, March 3rd. I'm Bob Moon.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis. Time now for the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics. At the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world, the Arab League is developing a plan to help end the violence in Libya. That idea from the regional body has calmed fears about an oil shortage, so prices for oil are down a bit today, a couple of bucks, but still above $100 a barrel. Now Britain and France are flying Egyptians and other foreign workers back to their home countries, too. The move underscoring Europe's worries about a refugee crisis. Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
The British government has chartered three planes to airlift Egyptian migrant workers trapped on the Libyan border back to Cairo. The UK believes it can ferry up to 8,000 Egyptians back home within the next few days. The French are planning to fly a further 5,000 of these migrants home. The move is both humanitarian and self-interested. The Europeans fear a major influx of refugees from North Africa, across the Mediterranean and into Europe. They're especially worried at a time when many European economies are struggling. Philip White is with the Centre for European Reform.
A lot of the countries which are most exposed to migration from North Africa and the Middle East, in other words, the Mediterranean countries, are the countries which are in the most difficulty at the moment.
Spain, Portugal and Italy are all grappling with stagnant growth and high unemployment. The Italian foreign minister seems the most alarmed at the potential influx. He says we could be talking about hundreds of thousands of refugees. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Global food prices have gone up for the eighth month in a row, according to a United Nations Food Index. The report proves that record-high basic food prices may be just as responsible for the unrest in the Middle East as politics are. From London, here's the BBC's John Bithrie.
The United Nations checks the prices of staple foods every month. During February, this so-called food basket rose by 2.2%, driven by rising dairy, grain and meat costs. Rising costs have helped fuel protests in Tunisia, Egypt and other countries in the Middle East. It all puts more pressure on governments to act on bringing down prices. Alex Evans is a food expert from the London think tank Chatham House.
What you have is growing competition for land, growing water scarcity, and a sense that the croc yield growth of the last few decades is starting to run out of steam.
The UN's also warned that rising oil prices could make this bad situation even worse. But it's not all bad news. Rice, a staple food for half the world, hasn't gone up in price so much, something the UN says it's very thankful for. In London, I'm the BBC's John Bithrie for Marketplace.
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton says the U.S. is exploring new strategies to fight pirates from Somalia. They've become a growing threat to sea traffic in the region, and Clinton told lawmakers this week that she's fed up with it.
For some background on the problem, we call upon Bronwyn Bruton. She's a fellow with the One Earth Foundation and joins us from our D.C. studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I'm hearing that 2011 is going to be a banner year for pirates. Why is that?
The pirates have a great operating model. They have a system where they use motherships to go very far out into the ocean. And there are only about 35 ships on the water right now that are attempting to deal with these pirates. So it's an open hunting ground for them. And because of that, it looks like they're going to increase the number of hijackings from last year.
Now, how far out is this spreading now with this mothership idea? And is there any way to rope that back in?
They're going as far east as India and as far south as Madagascar. If an attack takes place, you know, 4 or 5 days away from where one of these naval vessels is, there's no way for them to respond in time. The ships make it back to Somalia, and once they're there, they're virtually unobtainable.
Now, if you read very much about this, you hear about the finance arms and operations managers of these pirating organizations. It sounds like they have business plans and investors. Is there a parallel to how legit businesses are run?
There is. Pirates are extremely well organized. For a long time, there was actually rumors that there was a stock market where if you were a widow whose husband had left a gun, you could go and invest it in a pirate operation and get a return on your weapon. There are concerns that these pirates are launching attacks based on intelligence provided by shipping industry officials, for example. There are concerns that the pirates are getting income from businessmen in the Middle East, international investors.
Is this only going to get worse?
I fear it probably will get worse before it gets better. In the last year, there's been an extremely alarming trend, a stark increase in the level of violence. Unfortunately, I think you can really tie this to some very successful efforts by the shipping industry to prevent pirate attacks. It's getting harder and harder for the pirates to get on the ships. And as their frustration increases, the level of violence is going up very, very rapidly as well.
Bronwyn Bruton is a fellow with the One Earth Foundation. Thanks for your insights this morning.
Thank you.
There's a new housing trend in France, Bob. I don't know if you've heard about this.
No.
New clear plastic globe-shaped homes that new owners are putting in the middle of these serene areas, maybe a forest or something like that. Very
Sounds
nice.
Like something out of the Jetsons.
Yeah, it could be. These transparent spheres allow people to see nature all around them without leaving the comfort in the indoors,
okay.
Right? So you're there. You have the furniture in there.
Mm-hmm.
So if you didn't get enough, Bob, of the last housing bubble? Now you can buy a bubble of your very own.
Ah, okay.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, the third day of March. I'm Steve Chiotakis, also known as Radio Chio on Twitter.
And I'm Bob Moon. Will there be professional football next season? The NFL's current labor deal expires at midnight tonight. The owners and players can't reach a deal on how to split $9 billion in annual NFL spoils. Players are expected to call a trick play, calling a timeout from their union. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler explains.
The owners threaten a lockout, which would keep players from coming to work or collecting a paycheck. So football players are considering a kind of financial onside kick. Gabe Feldman directs the sports law program at Tulane. He says the players could dissolve their union and reform as a trade association.
And then, most importantly, filing an antitrust suit against the NFL, claiming that all the rules that they might put in place, including free agency rules, a salary cap, a draft, violate the antitrust laws. And that would leave the owners vulnerable not only to damages, but under the antitrust laws, you get three times damages.
Feldman says the legal maneuvers will be expensive for both sides. As for the big question, will there be a football season? Feldman's best guess?
I don't think either side wants to kill the golden goose at this point.
He thinks there's too much money at stake for either players or owners to risk canceling games. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
From the football field to cable television, the hit HBO show Entourage dealt with a newly minted movie star, his friends, and all the pitfalls of Hollywood and fame. Well, the show's creator has a new project that's less Tinseltown and a little more downtown, as in Manhattan. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith reports.
The show, called 40, deals with a 40-year-old New Yorker, played by Ed Burns, whose life is turned upside down when his company, Bear Stearns, collapses. Sound familiar? Maybe a little too familiar, says TV historian Tim Brooks.
Television has to be connected in some way with reality. But we want kind of a shiny version, as opposed to doom and despair.
HBO's calling 40 a comedy, but Brooks says if the problems hit too close to home, people won't want to watch it. Porter Bibb with Media Tech Capital Partners disagrees.
Well, the feature documentary that took the Oscar this year was all about the financial crisis, and you can count the bestsellers. And I just think we're all caught up in it, and it's meaningful, and it's compelling.
Bibb says he also thinks this could attract the young audience HBO is after, because so many recent grads can't find work. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
And finally, you know, Steve, heroes sure have changed from when I grew up. You can still find G.I. Joe at the toy store, but yeah. Now there's a company marketing a new line of action figures, and look who they've chosen to model their foot-tall characters after. The stars of TV ads that pitch body wash, insurance, and beer.
Oh, wow.
Apparently, these are the most manly men that Connecticut-based hero builders could come up with. The Old Spice guy, yeah. The mayhem guy who gets beat up in all the Allstate commercials.
Yeah. Remember him.
And the most interesting man in the world from the Dos Equis spot.
That's right, the beer.
I wonder, though, maybe they should have listened to this advice from that last guy.
Find out what it is in life that you don't do well, and then don't do that thing.
No, this is no joke. These new action figures are supposed to retail between $50 and $60. What do you think? You can take a look at them on our website, marketplace.org.
I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles.
And I'm Bob Moon. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.